Well, good morning and welcome. My name is Dan Proud. I am a member of Prairie. My pronouns are he, him, and his. And I'm up here because my wife is on the program committee. So, and I don't mind at all. I'm very happy to be here today. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation, and we welcome people of all backgrounds, ethnic and religious, whatever your color, sexual orientation, family structure, age, or abilities. And later on in the service, there will be an opportunity for guests and visitors to introduce yourselves so that we may have something in common when we greet you. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. Our services are presented either by a Prairie member or a member of the wider community, such as today. And we'll read the opening words.
May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other.
Okay. Mary Mullen will read the chalice, and Patty Stockdale will light the chalice.
We gather this hour as people of faith, with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, in celebration of the life that we share together.
Thank you, Mary. Well, I'd like to introduce our presenter today, Claire Box. Claire is a member of First Unitarian Society. She's been there since 1990, and she's here having worked with many, many diagnoses of dementia, including with friends and family members. She's currently retired and continues to share her experiences with groups such as churches, dementia support programs, and meditation communities. Claire also has a diagnosis of Lewy body dementia and has learned much about embracing this diagnosis with acceptance and with self-compassion and love. So it's my pleasure to introduce Claire Box.
So, you know, it's just a delight to be with you here. The last time I was at Prairie was for a wedding of a friend at the old building, so that was quite a few years ago now. So I was asked to talk about dementia, and it's a topic that's not very easy sometimes for all of us to face. I think it's fear, maybe lack of understanding, or having had difficult and sad experiences with loved ones. This is where I began the journey many, many years ago as a nurse, and then with friends and family, I began to have a better understanding of the difficulties of addressing these topics openly. So for me personally, I've been on this journey myself for several years, beginning with a diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment, then moving on to probably Alzheimer's, and even more recently, probable Lewy body dementia. Early on, I received a warning from a friend, I guess you would call it, that I should keep this private because other folks might treat me differently. I chose another path by first talking about this 2 years ago at First Unitarian Society, and I've never regretted the decision. The discussion of dementia, and actually all disabilities, is a part of our UU commitment to being a welcoming place for all. And if we don't know how to welcome people with disabilities, it makes it pretty challenging and kind of fearful. And in particular, I looked at the back of your order of service. I was thinking of the first UU principle honoring the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Our one heartfelt belief I have about a community of caring is that we can accept the vulnerabilities in ourselves and be safe enough to share them with each other. And maybe in a smaller community that's easy. In a larger community that becomes even more difficult. Sometimes this sharing happens in small groups, or like chalice groups, or I don't know if you have chalice groups, classes, in services, and during, like today, joys and sorrows. When we do this sharing, we open our hearts, our tender hearts, so that we can feel compassion, not just for ourselves, but for others and for the universal suffering in this troubled world. However, if we close down, turn away, we become numb with a frozen heart. One of my favorite and heartfelt books about dementia, there's dozens and dozens of books out there on and online resources, is My Two Elaines by Martin Schreiber. He speaks often here in Madison, and he's just a delight. He donates all of his income. He pretty much is on the road a lot, donates all of his income from the sale of his book to research on dementia and Alzheimer's. A story I heard last year when he spoke in Madison was powerful. His wife is in memory care now with advanced Alzheimer's. It has been a very long journey. They were having lunch, and she said to him, "I think I love you as much as I love my husband." His response, "I love you too." So simple and true. Recognizing and sharing vulnerabilities, the risks, is a risk, sometimes scary and often held deep inside. One of the possible consequences of this is that we can withdraw from our communities and ourselves. And over my years at FUS, sometimes I'd see somebody, I hadn't seen them in quite a while, and I'd say, "Well, I missed you, where have you been?" Sometimes they'd say, "Oh, I'm fine, busy," but more often, the most common comment I heard is, "Well, I was going through a difficult time." So I wonder, why would it be that we would withdraw from our sacred communities of caring during a difficult time? Sharing our vulnerabilities is a sacred giving and receiving. If we open our hearts and listen, it's an act of generosity. We become sacred witnesses for each other. So, I'm off track a little bit, but I'm kind of watching the time. I won't do that. I was going to tell you another story, but I wouldn't. So I think there's some important things to understand about dementia. And there really is the process of diagnosis, which many of you may know a lot about, the number of possible diagnoses, and the spectrum after diagnosis. So, the diagnostic process, as I can attest to, can be lengthy and at times very unclear. And this is really a hard time for the patient and for loved ones. It takes multiple exams, both cognitive testing as well as radiology procedures. I had a bunch of PET scans also, so it seemed to go on forever. This can take many months or maybe years to complete, and even then the diagnosis can be uncertain. And as I mentioned, this continues. As I said, for me, the best guess is I have Lewy body dementia, but it's not certain. Living with the unknown is always scary, and it's hard to accept, even though intellectually we know that really all is unknown. Everything is unknown. We walk out the door, we don't know what's going to happen. Make sure I got my pages right. Yeah. Many diseases... I'm sorry, I mixed up my pages. This is something I have trouble with. So I even put the numbers on. All right. Okay. Okay, we're back on track. Diagnosis is often made more difficult when loved ones sometimes push to get a diagnosis when the disease has really progressed quite to a point that it makes it really hard to engage the person that has the dementia in the process. The sooner the better, and this can be challenging. You know, there are many, many different kinds of diagnoses of dementia. Alzheimer's is the most common. It's about estimated about 60% of dementia is Alzheimer's. Vascular dementia is second, and maybe around 25. These figures keep changing. And dementia with Lewy bodies is about 15%. It's less common. And then there are a whole bunch of others that are very uncommon. So some people will start with Parkinson's disease and then get dementia. With Lewy body dementia, you start usually with the cognitive changes and then you develop Parkinson's symptoms. So there are probably four or five other diagnostic categories that have, you know, 1 or 2%. They're very rare. But, you know, there are also other causes for dementia. Many diseases can cause dementia in the later stages. People with multiple sclerosis can develop dementia. It's also possible for people with HIV to develop cognitive impairment and dementia, especially if they're not taking adequate antiviral medications. Not so common these days as it was when I worked with people in the 90s when treatment was just starting. As a nurse and friend, I've witnessed this type of dementia, and it's particularly challenging and sad, as often there has been a long journey with the primary illness. And the body is young, so the body keeps going and the mind disappears. And I particularly remember one family whose son was dying of AIDS for several years. Yet he was young, and his memory was totally gone before he died. So when we think of dementia, I think sometimes we forget about the spectrum because it really varies with people. I think most times you say dementia to somebody and they imagine this, but you know, we can see that people can be confused and perhaps unable to communicate. That's the end stages of dementia. However, there are many of us who continue to live productive lives for some years before the illness and confusion makes life more limited and challenging. At each stage of the inevitable progress of the dementia, people have different needs, concerns, ways of coping. But one thing remains constant, and that is that the person's treated with dignity, compassion, and love. And I believe that's what we all want in our lives. And most importantly, it's important to remember with dementia that there's also joy. The joy of holding a baby, the joy of being with those you love, the joy of a sunrise, the joy of a favorite meal, the laughter of an old joke or funny memory. So bringing joy as well as compassion, love, and dignity to life is such a gift to all of us. So in the early stages, which is where I am, the emotional issues are often denial and fear. Just hearing the diagnosis. Short-term memory becomes more difficult. This morning I made 2 trips back to my apartment to get what I needed, for instance. Remembering what you're doing, starting something and getting distracted, keeping track of the calendar and obligations, perhaps knowing that you know someone but not remembering from where, losing things or leaving them behind, or not being able to find them in your own apartment. as with all cognitive changes, this part of the journey is different for each person. It's a good time to also learn new coping skills. If you are diagnosed early, I've learned a lot of things that I can do. So I use my iPhone a lot with an alert before every event, which is very helpful. Of course, not all of us use electronic devices. Each person and their loved ones have to develop an individualized way to help people cope to the losses that they're having. And first, they have to admit the losses. I have a step-grandson that I call my goddess son because I was offered the title godmother, so I changed it to goddess mother. He has attention deficit disorder. He's a lovely young man, and recently I said to them that I think I had a much better understanding of what he must experience as we compared notes. So it does feel like I have attention deficit disorder. I don't, but I did ask my doctor maybe if he could give me drugs for that, but he refused. Not helpful when someone discusses their concerns. It is not helpful when someone discusses their concerns. And most frequently what I hear from people, I don't believe you have a diagnosis, or, oh, that happens to everyone. So when I get that from somebody, what I'm really trying to share with what I'm struggling with, I feel discounted, not heard, and more discouraged. And I think, you know, friends don't want to believe it, or they want to say, well, I forget things. And I think they're probably afraid for me. But I sure would like somebody to say, that must be tough sometimes. You know, just acknowledge the truth. Then we go, the diseases usually progress to a middle ground, and that's a difficult time. I have a very dear friend that is in this position right now. So she knows that she still has memory losses. It's hard for people around her, and it's hard for her, the person. At least she and many others are often embarrassed, angry at themselves, saying things like, I'm really losing it. I just cannot do anything anymore. At times, this is when family and loved ones begin to consider, especially if they're living alone, as I am, to consider a change in environment. Under all of this is the fear of loss of independence. Loss of independence. Self-blame. What did I do to get this? Words that I've often heard and said to myself. My friend and many are fiercely independent and very private, and sometimes they have the most difficulty because this has been their lifelong way of living. So telling somebody what's going on is really tough for them. And so I found with my friend anyway, just kind of moving gently and slowly with dignity can be time consuming, but also helpful. Kind of taking it in little tiny baby steps. I was sitting with a dear friend a few years ago at this part of the journey with him, and he said, I can't do anything anymore. I feel useless. My response was, it is true that you cannot do the work like writing books anymore. That's true. You have a memory loss. He was a very famous chemical engineer. So what can you do? And what do you do? I said to him. This led to a chat about how he helps in the garden and the other things he does. And then we talked about memories, and we were sitting in their house overlooking in Seattle, overlooking the water and how beautiful it was. And after a bit, he asked me to go into the kitchen. My initial response was that I hadn't done very well with the conversation. However, I followed him into the kitchen, and he pointed out an achievement award on the refrigerator from the prestigious Chemical Engineering Society. Long-term memory and talks of old times is fun and reassuring for folks. In the late part of dementia, which is Am I doing okay on time?
Yeah.
Okay. And the late part of dementia is really the tough time, and because that's when you may not be able to communicate very much with them. Now, sometimes a person is able to function physically and with direction. Like I have a friend with that can get out of the car and he can walk, but he needs to figure out how to get his legs out of the car. And particularly if they don't have any underlying health problems, that they can become quite confused before they start having physical problems. However, this is often the time when they're not quite aware that they have cognitive deficits. And in a way, I think internally, that's a little bit of a relief for them. They're kind of no longer aware that they don't remember. The journey continues, and then often physical symptoms become quite profound over time. But it's the same thing when you're dealing with people. Dignity, compassion, love, support. And it's very hard, particularly for families. I usually greet at FUS in the morning, and there's a woman that comes with her sons. Her two sons are taking care of her at home. She's in a wheelchair and is nonverbal, advanced Alzheimer's. But when she comes to the door in the wheelchair, I stop, I take her hand, and I look into her eyes, and I say, "I'm so happy you're here today." And she gives just a little teeny smile. So you know you've connected with her. And it just that moment seems worth it to me. There was another man that I talked to that his wife was in the advanced stages of memory care, and he was nonverbal, non-communicative, and I don't know if you would call it, you know, close to death, I would say, not able to really respond to much. So she was washed and turned and all that kind of stuff. And he went to have lunch with her every day. So one of the staff members said to him, "Well, you know, she doesn't know you're here. Why bother to come? You don't have to come every day." And this man looked at her and said, "But I do. I would know it. I need to be here. And want to be here." One day when my mom was in a nursing home, she was dying of heart failure, even though not from her dementia, and I was walking down the hall. I saw a man that I had known since coming to Madison as an undergraduate in nursing school. He was chatting away to two, I assume, were nursing assistants, and they weren't listening. So I went over and heard him describe some stories that he had about some businesses that he had owned. I'll have to tell you, it was about wine, so I'm going to fess up to that. So I said to him that he taught me everything I knew about wine. He probably didn't remember me, but I remembered him. And I said, "Now, don't you have three stores now?" And he says, "Yes." And I said, "Aren't your sons running those stores now?" And yes. And so we had a nice little discussion about his history with being a wine seller in Madison. And so I just, actually I was pretty pissed off to admit it about the nursing assistants. And it's just another lesson in listen, listen, listen. Don't assume he's just telling stories. I mean, they just thought he was babbling. I recently read a profound book that's actually about death, but it seems to really apply to my journey and to other people's journeys. And it's called The Five Invitations: Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully. It's also a great book if you're dealing with somebody that's dying. It's by Frank Ostapczyk. It's been a gift to me, and even in the rather difficult times. So dementia is a diagnosis. It is one of the most dreaded fears for people. So just take a couple of little conscious deep breaths. And answer this question in your heart. Are you more afraid of death or losing your mind? So, he has these invitations. He says his first invitation is, don't wait. Don't wait. Such an important thing related to dementia. Because the earlier the treatment, the longer the longevity, the better the progress, the better chance you have to learn new coping skills, as I said. And I first noticed some difficulties, and I took myself into the doctor, because I had a family history of dementia. I asked for an evaluation, and it kind of surprised my DD, as I fondly call him, my dementia doctor. He said most folks wait until somebody brings them in or things are quite progressed. And as I said, early treatment is such a gift. It's a gift for the family and it's a gift for the person. And I think one of the things that helped me see some of the things going on with me is my meditation and mindfulness practice. Because when I would sit down, it was harder to push away things that I was trying to pretend weren't happening. He goes on to say, welcome everything, don't push anything away. Welcome everything? Really? While I do still have negative self-judgment, fear, and sometimes shame, I'm learning to recognize them. I can see it. Oh, you think you caused this, and not run away. And for me, humor really helps. So, like today, I told you, I had to go back to the house twice to get the things that I really needed to be. And so I can just kind of smile and laugh about it. Or sometimes I get down to the basement and I've left my purse upstairs. It's 46 steps back to my apartment. So I say, oh, goody, I get a chance to walk 46 minutes.
How much? A couple more minutes.
Okay. Well, I think we will end because I'll tell you the two other invitations. I knew I'd probably go too long. Find a place in the middle of things. So go ahead. You know, sometimes I stop doing things, and then I step back and I say, why am I stopping doing this? Can I really not do this? I mean, I know I can't do things, for instance, that I could do a month or a year ago. But sometimes I stop myself. So there's a teacher that I really like who says, his name is Ajahn Chah, are you sure? So when I find myself backing away, I ask myself that question, are you sure? So it is important that we remember to cultivate don't know mind. We don't know what's going to happen, so we need to do adequate planning. And one of the parts of the adequate planning is deciding and making your wills up to date and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Where are you going to live? If you live alone, that's additional. And just keeping recognizing fear day by day is not easy. Sometimes I run away from it. I see myself running away from it. Sometimes I do something really dumb like overeat, and that just numbs you for a little while and doesn't help. So, let me just end, because you'll hear me talking for 3 hours, I better stop. I think the bottom line for me is to embrace, really embrace with an open heart, acceptance, gratitude, and joy. It's always present. Joseph Campbell says, we cannot cure the world of sorrows, but we can choose to live in joy. So may I live this day, this one day, compassionate of heart, dear in word, gracious in awareness, courageous in thought, and generous in love. John and Donnie, thank you. You know, and if you're ever worried about it, you can go to your own internist and just do a short 10-minute assessment. And there's a lot of good literature about what's the difference between normal aging, cognitive changes, and dementia. All of us after a certain age do not have the cognitive abilities that we had when we were 20. I sat one night with a guy dying of AIDS years ago, and he was comatose. He had TV on. His mother had taken medication, had TV on in the living room. I was going nuts. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I turned the TV off. He woke up and he said, "Don't you like TV?" It's the only thing he said all night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing I forgot to mention is that I have some handouts that are double-sided in case you're interested about creating dementia-friendly communities and resources that I'll put out wherever I should put them out. Shoulders by Naomi Shihab Nye. A man crosses the street in rain, stepping gently, looking two times north and south because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him. No car drive too near his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile. Handle with care. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he is doing with one another. The road will only be wide. The rain will never stop falling.
Thank you. Greet your neighbor, and we'll have some time for fellowship and coffee. Thank you.